family. I'm Sam. I'm an alcoholic. Okay, well, we're just going to jump right in, pick up where the boys left off. So just out of curiosity, how many relapsers? You understand relapsing? That's it? We all know relapsing, right? You come in, work the steps, get some happy joy, and then get loaded again. Now, how many relapsers? Yeah, raise them proud. Fuck them, right? Now, the rest of them are original winners. Because I like to call them the pussies. So I think it's important to hang in there. But, you know, you hear a lot about, you know, that relapse is not a part of recovery. And that's true. I mean, it doesn't have to be a part of recovery unless it is, you know. But relapse is part of my recovery. So I come from that place of, what happened? I don't understand. What happened? And I'll talk more, you know, tomorrow. But the way Chris describes it and the way Larry went through the steps was, you know, for me, step one is, you know, you're doomed. That's it. It's an ass kicking. And all through the first step in the 12 and 12, it talks about an utter defeat, complete defeat, total defeat, utter defeat, complete defeat, total defeat. It's like an ass kicking. So step one is kind of like we assume that y'all have taken step one before you even get here. I don't take step one. Step one takes me, you know. In the old days, it was like, they're here. That's enough. You concede to your innermost self that you're an alcoholic. Yeah, that's the first step. You've taken step one. Do you believe or are you willing to believe that there's a power greater than yourself? Which seems so strange to have a problem with, because it's like, I got the IRS. Do you have the IRS here? Some sort of fine. Okay. The IRS, the sheriff's department, police department. You know, I mean, I got so many powers greater than me that it seems strange that once we get here, we're like, oh, I don't know. Let me rethink that. I don't, you know. But, and then step three, you know, Chris was talking about a commitment needed for step one, you know, and I don't know that you need a commitment, you know, to commit to this program the minute you get in, like I'm committed, but it's like step three is about the commitment. The decision is a commitment. Step one's about a surrender. It's about an ass kicking. Step two is like, eh, kind of an open mind, whatever. You know, the way I was told was step one is I can't get drunk and I can't get sober. Step two is I find someone who's doing better than I am. My sponsor, she had all her teeth. So right off the bat, she was doing better than me. And step three was do what they say. So that was like one, two, three, boom. And Chris is right. You know, the way we get through the steps or the way I was taught is you're in it and you're done. Within 4 weeks, you know, you're done, whatever, you know. Step three is the only step that they talk about that starts off practicing. Practicing step three. So step three is never a step I complete. Step three is a constant whatever you want, whatever you want, God, whatever you want, whatever you want, God, whatever you want, whatever you fucking want, whatever you want, whatever you want. I mean, that's step three for me, is this constant repetition of getting realigned and realigned and realigned and realigned. And that's why I call a lot of you my spiritual chiropractors, because a lot of times it's just, you guys just whack me back into line. You know what I mean? So anyways, so I'm going to work out of the big book and the 12 and 12. And if you got those with you, that's cool. And if you don't, that's cool too. But I'm going to read a little bit, because I don't know any other way for me to stay focused and stay on topic but to read a little bit out of the book. And Larry talked about it, the ABCs, right? And then being convinced, comma, now we're at step three. And the big book talks about what that looks like and having a new power and having a new employer and relying on God and all that stuff. And then it says how it works, right? So we do step three, right? I took it on my knees. I have no idea why, except that she said, let's get on our knees. And I didn't have a lot of resistance to it, because she said, you know, you've gotten on your knees for a lot of other shit, so why not get on your knees for this? And she had a good point. I didn't really want to bring that stuff up again, so just move on through. Okay. So page 63, I don't know what it is in you guys' book. So we find it desirable to take this spiritual step with an understanding person, but it's better to meet God alone than with one who might misunderstand. The wording's optional as long as we express the idea of voicing it without reservation. Again, when I'm new, none of this stuff is making a lot of sense to me. Like when my sponsor says, you know, when you ask her, hey, will you be my sponsor? And she says something like, well, are you willing to go to any lengths? I don't, my response was like, yeah, of course. And then when it got busted down to what any lengths might look like, I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, you know, my sponsor gave me direction. Now, okay, so here's the deal. Disclaimer, disclaimer, disclaimer. First of all, I'm 14 and a half years sober. I am a newcomer with these guys. So if I say something that's not your experience, that's totally cool, a lot like what Chris said. If I say things that are not their experience, I expect them to correct me. I may go, fuck you, and do what I want anyway, but I still expect them to correct me, you know what I mean? So I'm going to give you my experience. And that means you really, you know, you can take me aside after the meeting and everything else, but you know, you'll lose because it's my experience and I got the scar tissue to prove it, you know? So it's my deal. And my deal is how I'm going to take you through the few steps here. And you do whatever you want with that. It's just suggestions, right? So, so it says that this is only a beginning, though. If honestly and humbly made, an effect, sometimes a very great one, was felt at once. Not my experience. I just did step three, then immediately got up, had my pen and paper, and we started writing. Right then. Boom, boom. We launched out on this course of vigorous action. The first step of this course of vigorous action, which is a personal house cleaning. So we started this personal inventory. And it says on page 64, resentment's the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. For we've not only been mentally and physically ill, we've been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, then we straighten out mentally and physically. How many people have you guys sponsored or you know that are like, I just got to get this job, man. I got to get this job. When I get this job, I'm going to get these steps down. I got to get my kids back. It's Sam, the only reason I'm staying sober is get my kids back. I'm just getting my kids back. And while I say, okay, what? I mean, I don't really care what the motivation is for you doing the steps. I don't care what the motivation is for you coming to meetings. If you're coming to meetings because he's there, fine by me. I don't care because all that shit will come out in the wash eventually anyway. I don't care if you're coming because there's hot chicks. Fine, go to that meeting. It doesn't matter to me, because that it's again, any external stuff that's going on, it really ain't about that. I mean, the scariest thing that someone broke down to me was, this program has nothing to do with drugs and alcohol. Don't tell anybody. If you're new, just like la 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 la, don't even listen. But this program has nothing to do with drinking. It's much scarier than that. Oh, shit. Right? Because it's about the word that makes me want to vomit. There's a little vomit in the back of my throat when I think about God. Blah. You know, it's God. You know what I mean? The higher power thing. That stuff was so hard for me to swallow. I had no problem with God. I knew there was one. I hated him. He hated me. And that was the way it was going to go. Because I could never be good enough for what my understanding of God was. I missed the whole point of grace. Missed that whole undeserved gift thing. Missed that altogether. So anyways, so I start out on this house cleaning. And this is the way I was taken through the steps. You make a list. Don't get all caught up in everything else. You make a list. First thing, off my knees from the third prayer, I'm making a list. Can I keep talking and it goes? Or do I have to bring something? Or what do I need to do? Wow! Okay. Just had to do that. Follow me with you. So I'm making a list. And I do it like this. Resentment list. One, mom. She's the biggie. Two, dad. Three, brother. Four, religion. Monogamy. Fuck is that? Right? Amen. Blah. Amen. Amen, brother. Blah, 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 blah. Got it? List, list, list. That's it. I do the list. Okay? Next. We go back to the book. And it says, we were as definite as this example. And then it gives us the example, right? Is this the same in your book? Okay. So the example is done vertically. You understand? Okay, well, my first resentment, I had a lot more to say about my mother. Whoa. Then I could fit in these little columns. I didn't understand. It was just sort of be a general kind of, because I had shit to say about her, right? So I'm like, so my sponsor says, and I turned out, I learned later that it was purely selfish, because she was so tired of hearing resentments or fourth steps that were in three columns where you do the cause, you know, the person, the cause, and then what it affects. And then you turn 60 pages to your part. And then you turn 60 pages back to the second resentment. And 60, it's like, Jesus. So here's how I was taught to do it. Remember, I have my list. So I get my list out. One, mom. I'm resentful at my mom because yada-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Got it? She doesn't hug me right. She's lame. She's phony. She's this, she's that, blah, 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 right? This affects my, so when I'm done with that, I turn the page, I'm still on mom, I'm still going horizontal. This affects my, I don't know if it's E or A, it doesn't matter. So it affects my, right? Still going to go this way. So there's five instincts that we're talking about. So I'm going to pause here for a sec and talk about the instincts. Talking about the fourth step, in the 12 and 12, it talks about instincts gone astray, right? So it's the natural God-given stuff. It's, they talk about it in step one, you know, how the instincts, and I'm going to read this in step one. How long do I have? Hour and a half. Jesus. Get up if you need to go smoke or whatever. In step one, it talks about who cares to admit complete defeat, right? Practically no one. Every natural instinct cries out against the idea of personal powerlessness. So I get that word instinct, and I cruise over to step four in the 12 and 12, and step four talks about these instincts. And it says they're good, man. It says creation gave us instincts for a purpose. Without them, we wouldn't be complete human beings. So we're already dealing with, even though we eventually call them character defects, right? Really what my character defects are these instincts that have far exceeded their normal purpose. It's not just that I want social, it's not just that I have social instinct where I care, you know, for other men and women and my society. It's that I'm a pig about it, right? I started saying this like I'm a little pig about recovery. And so now people give me pigs all the time. I got this little pig collection going. I don't know what it is, but anyway. So if there was no social instinct, if they didn't, if we didn't made no effort to harvest food or construct shelter, it's not that I just want food, right? I want all of it. You should have seen me at the buffet today. It's just embarrassing. I was telling the guys, I'm like, I don't know if I'll ever become that kind of person that sits. I was watching this guy, and he was really, well, first of all, he's all really organized, and I'm not really organized, but he like has tie and glasses and just, you know, whatever, and his little cup of coffee or tea, and then his little toast with the fish, and he's just eating, you know, and just really, and I had like four plates because it's a buffet, and I got to try everything because don't you have to try everything? I mean, it's just sort of, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but anyways, and half of it's not even, I don't even finish half of it, just this wasteful frickin' American again, which I apologize for. I just apologize for America, Americans, the whole puritanical Judeo-Christian thing. Sorry. Not that it's bad. Like I said, I love Jesus. I just hate his fan club. Okay, so. Anyway, some of his fan club. So if we didn't harvest food or construct shelter, I don't just want a house. I want, you know, whatever. And there'd be no survival. So the desires for the sex relation, the material and emotional security for companionship are perfectly necessary and right and surely God-given. And yet these are the very instincts that I'm going to talk about that we talk about in step four that have been threatened. My instincts have been threatened. And what are the instincts we talk about? Right? It's self-esteem, right? It's security. And they also talk about pocketbook. So it's physical security and it's financial security. You got that? We talk about ambitions, things hoped for, dreamed for, desired. We talk about personal relationships and sexual relationships. So I don't know, maybe I was 5 or 6 years sober before I started to get this. I have a resentment that affects my self-esteem. That means in some ways, for lack of a better word, my self-esteem is broken. Can we use that word just for, you know, for the purpose of being on the same page? It's somewhat broken. It's not a healthy, objective, balanced view of who I truly am. And the 12 and 12 talks about, you know, sort of what humility is, the practical view of humility. The practical view of humility is you're really not the best and you're really not the worst. And if you want to really offend an alcoholic, tell them they're just average. You know what I mean? It's like, what? Okay? So I got a broken self-esteem. Either I'm grandiose, either I think I'm better than everybody else, or, you know, I'm worse than everybody else, and so on and so forth. It's that infantile egomaniac with the, you know, inferiority complex. You know? So, self-esteem. I got a broken self-esteem. If I have a broken self-esteem, what kind of ambitions do you think I'm going to shoot for? What kind of dreams, hopes, and desires do you think I'm going to shoot for? I mean, instead of going to medical school, I'm content to sell lemonade. Nothing wrong with selling lemonade. I'm just saying. You feel the difference? It's like, oh, I really couldn't. I never could, blah, blah, blah. So I got a broken self-esteem. I got a broken self-esteem. I got broken ambition. If I got a broken ambition, what kind of security do you think I'm going to provide for myself? Somewhat broken, again, for lack of a better word, right? Broken financially and broken physically. Because if I can't provide for myself financially, I can't really feel contained and safe and what have you. Are we still on the same page? Just busting right through this. Broken self-esteem, broken dreams, hopes, ambitions, broken security. What kind of personal relationships do you think I'm going to be having? It's that whole, anybody see Jerry Maguire, that movie? It's the whole lie of, you complete me. The fuck? Nothing has ever done more damage. Right? You had me at hello. Shut the fuck up. How am I doing with that profanity thing? Tomorrow I'm really going to be good, though. Spiritual speaker. Okay. So anyway, broken ambitions, broken personal relationships, because it's all going to be about how can you fix me? How can you complete me? How can you take care of me? How can you fulfill my dreams and hopes? You, how can you do it? And if it's not you, it's the job. It's the government. It's whatever. It's something outside of myself. It has to be because I'm broken, right? And if these are all broken, what kind of people am I getting into bed with? I'm just saying. Right? I ain't judging. I'm just saying. So there it is. So I just came with, what does this resentment affect? All of them. I don't think that the way that my mom treated me is going to affect my personal sexual relationships, but of course it does, because I got a broken core, right? So just write all five of them down. Screw it. You know what I mean? And we'll get to why that is later, but I just tell my sponsees, just write all five of them down. And if you can, give me a little example as to why. Even if you just start off with what she did to me affected my self-esteem, because when she didn't hug me or when she didn't touch me, this is how I felt. Okay? So now we're getting through it. We're getting through the three columns, right? We're going to get through the fourth column. We're just going horizontal. So now I'm done with that, and I'm on to the fourth column, which is my part. My fault, my part, whatever. And this is the stuff sometimes that people have the biggest struggle with, you know? I sponsor women, a woman that was tied to the bed, with handcuffed to the bed while her dad went to the bar. Okay? 6 years old, what's her part? Not really any part in that. But what's happening is I have an expectation. This is hard now. Okay, this is one that's tough to swallow. I have an expectation that fathers don't handcuff their daughters to the bed while they go to the bar. But what's reality? I have an expectation that big brothers don't touch their little sisters in ways that my big brother touched me. But what's reality? Now, that stuff stopped 35 years ago, and I'm still living like it's continuing to happen. In fact, I may even be creating it over and over and over. And if I'm not continuously being a victim, I become a perpetrator, which was my story. No one will ever touch me like that again. No one will ever hurt me like that again. And as far as your sexual experience, I don't give a fuck. Not something I'm proud of, and I could justify it up and down, in and out, all the other way. It wasn't even conscious so many times. Because it wasn't that blatant. I wasn't that overtly mean most of the time. It's just, it didn't really concern me, you know? But I didn't even know that those were the words or that was the experience I was having, okay? So, and any way you slice it, the human experience was incomplete. Because I really believe, and this is hard for a lot of us who struggle with intimacy, is that the human experience is connection. And that God, for me, my higher power, my creator, or dog, as I like to call him, dog, God, same thing, exists in the space between you and me. He's in the space between you and me. And so when I hook up with you, when I touch you, when I hold your hand, that's where, and if I don't hold your hand, I notice you guys don't hold hands during the prayer, which I think is great sometimes. Because in where I come from, everybody like links arms. I'm like, that's too close for me. You know, just, you can hold my hand. That's, you know, they're like, come on, hook it up. I'm like, I am hooking it up. Back off, buddy. You know, give me a little dancing space. So anyway, the point is that when I hook up with you eye to eye, which I've gotten to do a lot already in 24, 36 hours I've been here, that's where God exists for me. You know, I need to be careful that I don't make this fellowship my higher power, or that I don't make the individuals in this fellowship my higher power. Because I'll tell you for sure, and people with long-term sobriety can attest to this, I'm sure. And that is that you can have long-term sobriety if you can survive this fellowship. Because sometimes this fellowship, we can be nasty. You know, we say we don't shoot our wounded. Bullshit. I find nothing more offensive than I'm sitting at a meeting and someone turns to me and says, he's been drinking. I'm like, bitch, yeah, it's Alcoholics Anonymous. Hello. You know what I'm saying? They're like, shh, shh. But I digress. I'm going to try to sit this here. I don't know. I'm kind of a spaz, as you can tell. So I don't know if it's going to work, but we'll see. So anyway, so now I'm into my part. So my first part is, if I ever struggle with, I can't find my part. My first part is expectations. And the 12 and 12 clarifies it a little bit better for me when it says on page 52, or if my disturbance was seemingly caused by the behavior of others, why do I lack the ability to accept conditions I cannot change? I don't believe that the fourth step is about forgiveness. Although, you know, I love Back to Basics. I love Joe and Charlie. I love a lot of the old timers who say that really the fourth step is about forgiveness. For me, that wasn't my experience. A lot of forgiveness for me came in step 8 and 9. So when I take someone through this step, I say, don't worry about forgiving the bastard right now. Don't worry about that. And thank God that the prayer, you know, the fourth step prayer in here doesn't say forgive the guy. It's still pretty untasty, though. Let's read it, shall we? God. God doesn't cut us a lot of wiggle room on this one, unfortunately. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God, so here's the prayer. God, help me show him the same tolerance, pity, and patience that I would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When he offended me, I said to myself, this is a sick mother man. How can I be helpful to somebody else? No, it doesn't say that. How can I be helpful to him? What? Come on. I can't. That's too much. So I say, so how can I be helpful to him? Perhaps the way I can be helpful to him is stay as far away from him and his family and everything he does as possible. Because here's what I know about Sam today. I'm spiritual enough to know where I can't be spiritual. And that is a huge ethical, you know, growth for me, is that I can't go there. I can't love that person. I cannot be kind. I cannot be tolerant. You know, so I love them from a distance. I stay away. I don't engage. I used to engage. You know what I mean? Nah, because I lose every time. It does start to be that whole thing. You know, the old timers used to say, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? I'm like, both, Avi. You know what I mean? That's no choice. What kind of choice is that? And then it came down to, it doesn't matter. What matters is that it eats me in from the inside out. See, that's the thing about the steps. See, you're going to recover with or without your permission if you do these steps. That's what's so scary. So if you don't want to get sober and you don't want to recover, don't do the steps. And stay as far away from people who have done the steps and are happy and joyous and free. Just get the fuck away from them, because you'll catch this thing. Something will happen, you know. And you'll have some sort of a psychic change that'll give you a profound alteration in the way you react to life. And holy mackerel, you will get a sufficient substitute to recover from alcoholism. Because I'm telling you what, man, you take away tequila and methamphetamine and, come on, that's just not right. Of course I'm getting rest. I mean, because tequila makes me slide down this, but just like, oh man, it's that kind of thing. So they're like, just give it up. Just put the plug in the jug. I don't get it. A lot of the old timers is like, you know, hey, I'm going to pick you up for a meeting. Go to meetings and don't drink between meetings. Don't get it. That's what Chris, I think, is somewhat is talking about in regards to, are these people really alcoholic? Because, see, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. So that means we get a shitload of people in here that may have a desire to stop drinking. And then they think that that's all that's required for sobriety. That's not what it says. Membership is just come on in. It takes a shitload more than that if you want to stay. You know. And I don't care who, you know, I mean, I'm going to be the one, this trio here is going to be the one that delivers the truth no matter how unpalatable it is, because frankly, it is a rather untasty recipe. Really. I mean, who cares to admit complete defeat, you know, turn their will and their life over to the care of some God that never did them any favors, write a list of your grosser handicaps and share them with some stranger who's going to gossip about you at the next meeting, you know? You know, have your character defects removed, which frankly are my survival skills. You know what I mean? Oh, you want that anger? Oh, you just take it. I'm just going to let go and let God. I don't fucking think so. I think not. Au contraire. Steps 8 and 9, stand in front of the judge. I did it, you know, because people want their money back. How offensive. And then step 10, of course, is the killer. Say you're wrong, not you're sorry. They don't care about I'm sorry. Nowhere in this book does it say apologize in step 10. Doesn't talk anything about apology. They don't want an apology. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. No, I'm sorry. I am so sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I don't give a fuck. It's over. I'm sorry's done. It's I was wrong. And if you don't think there's a difference between I was wrong and I'm sorry, try I was wrong. It's like I was wrong. I was wrong. I was wrong. You know? Here's the good news about step 10. Just my experience. You don't even have to be sorry to do step 10. Because that's hard, especially if you're right. You know what I mean? It's like, but it says promptly. And so sometimes I can't get from, you know, I was wrong to I'm sorry and promptly. So I have to say, like, I was wrong to use that tone, you know, you dumb motherfucker, you know, or something like that. But you kind of leave that off. But the whole point is that I can say I was wrong long before I'm sorry. Because there's lots of times that I say things that I don't feel sorry for saying, but I wish I had used a different tone. I wish I hadn't said it in front of your wife. I wish I, you know, whatever the deal is I could have done it differently. I need to do it differently. In fact, my whole effectiveness in my relationship with you is if I do it differently. Does that make sense? So that's step 10. Step 11, of course, is, you know, the biggie. Right? It's like prayer and meditation. You need a coach. I mean, to sit quiet for a minute, you know, just like, ugh. And then 12 is the kicker, who wants to sacrifice time and energy carrying the message to some other ungrateful broad who's not going to stay sober anyway. You know what I mean? And the 12 and 12 talks about, that's why it's such an unpalatable truth. You know, the average alcoholic, self-centered in the extreme, doesn't care too much for this recipe unless he has to do it in order to stay alive himself. And I was 8 years sober before I caught the word alive. I thought it said sober. It says alive. Which prompts the next question, what kind of death are we talking about, right? Because if it's a fast death, you know, it's the, you know, live a spiritual life or die an alcoholic death. And only us alcoholics are like, hang on, don't rush me, don't push me, let me weigh that out. Alcoholic life, you know. So, I mean, you take a poll down at the grocery store, they're like, I don't even know what you're talking about, spiritual life or alcoholic death, but I'll take a spiritual life. But not us. We're like, no, wait. Well, is it bloody death? Is it a long, drawn-out death? Okay. So anyway, so we're back to step four. We're looking at our part, and then we get to resolutely, you know, sort of investigate. And that's the prayer, the four-step prayer on page 67. You know, God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done. Thy will be done. Now I'm out again. I'm out of the mix. Step three, I'm in the mix, turning my will and my life over to the care of God, right? I don't give my life and will to God, my thinking and my actions. I turn it over to the care of God. He doesn't want my life. He gave it to me, right? And I just really quick, it's like step three and step four are so important together because it really, you know, step four is the real physical manifestation of the faith that I just had. And I want to talk for a second about the difference between faith and trust. Faith is cool. But the very definition of faith is it's a belief. Trust is an action. You know, the old timers used to tell the story about, you know, the difference between faith and trust is faith is the belief that God could get you across the canyon in a wheelbarrow on a high wire. Trust is getting in the fucking wheelbarrow. You see what I'm saying? Now we're really talking. You know, I believe God could as you're standing next to it, right? We'll get in. No, that's all right. That's cool, you know. And that's really why they talk about, you know, no, the average alcoholic self-centered in the extreme doesn't care too much for this prospect unless he has to do it in order to stay alive himself. Because practicing the remaining, you know, 12 steps or whatever requires a certain attitude. And the attitude is, let's get in. Let's commit. Because I got to trust the process that the shit that I'm going to write down and whoever I choose to share it with, you know what? If they gossip about me at the next meeting, if everybody knows my shit, what? That's when the fellowship might fail you. How many times have I heard people go, man, you know, my sponsor, they drank. It's like, yeah. And, you know? Or so-and-so told about my so-and-so to so-and-so. We are a bunch of gossiping, you know, it's like, oh, character assassination. None of us do that. Come on. Especially the first year. Our lives are so boring. All we can talk about is, did you hear that she's going to get a divorce? Did you hear that someone had a little 13 stepping going on? I think she took a little bit too much of those antidepressants. I mean, whatever. It's just like so boring. Our lives are so boring, right? So anyways, we're into this next part where we didn't like the symptoms. We're praying that prayer. Referring to our list again, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. So expectations comes first for me if I struggle. And then it says, pretty simple, selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened. Selfish. What's the difference between selfish and self-seeking, you know? Use the dictionary. That's what we need to do. I use the dictionary the whole time. And I've never given, I don't know, I don't think these guys do it either, but I don't give the book to the newcomer and go, read the first 164 pages and call me. You know, that was never done with me. Lots of people in my town do it like that. I guess they assume that everybody reads and speaks English, which not even Americans speak English. You know what I mean? I need a dictionary for half. Rapacious creditor? What the fuck is that? I know what a creditor is, but rapacious? Come on. So anyway, so then we're back into look at where am I selfish, where am I self-seeking, where am I dishonest, and where am I afraid, you know? And then we get the fear thing. Notice the fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Ms. Jones, and my employer, right? So the fear list is the next thing that we do, right? It's a list. Don't make it any more difficult than that. My fears list. Right? Snakes, spiders, whatever. I'm not really scared of those things. I'm just saying. So, and then, so you get all the sort of, you're not really sure where all this is going and who cares. But then you get down to some of the more meaty stuff, you know, success, failure, marriage, divorce, sex, no sex, right? Fat, skinny, old, young, I don't know, whatever, girl, boy, just you, blah, 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 right? So far kind of following the books. People make this so hard. Like I say, this is nothing. Four steps, a piece of cake. The sixth step is what's going to kick your ass. But anyways, I digress. So, fear, 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 fear. It's an evil and corroding thread. I love images. I'm a big image person. When I talk tomorrow, I'll give you a bunch of visualizations that my sponsor gave me. The icy shark-infested waters, the rapacious creditor, the tyrant alcohol. These are all just awesome images that help me know and be introduced to my disease. It's like, welcome. Now you've met your disease, right? So fear is this evil and corroding thread. So I look at the fabric of my existence like this beautiful tapestry. That Sammy is this beautiful tapestry. And she's made up of all these different textures and fine threads and some rough threads in there too, and some just some string or some fishing wire. So I mean, there's just all, and there's some gold and there's some silver and there's beautiful things in this tapestry called Samantha. And I turn around as I'm weaving this thing, and it's just getting eaten up by these little termites that ceaselessly devour the foundation. And that's why I love, and again, going back to the 12 and 12, in step 4, it talks about on page 49, after they talk about the seven deadly sins, and I have them highlighted, you know, it's conscious fears is the basic breeder of most human difficulties, right? So the cool thing is they've gently given us, in step 4, the seven deadly sins. So it looks like a little bit of, I don't know, choice. There's some choice there. In the seventh step, it just breaks it down. It's like it's all about fear. But we're not ready to hear that yet in step 4, that it's all about self-centered fear. Right now, we want to hear like, well, it's gluttony and it's, you know, so it's pride. It's just fear. It's all fear, 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 fear. Because every single character defect, if you want, everything that is not peace is fear. So you think of it. Is lust, is it peaceful? Not saying it's bad or good, right? I'm just saying there's peace and there's fear. We can call it love if you want, but love gets so convoluted. You know, love is such a, you know, I think most, and I don't know about your language, but there's so many countries where they have a bunch of different ways to say love, which is appropriate because there's a bunch of different ways to say it. In the English language, there's only one word they use for this multiple of meanings. So, of course, it gets convoluted. What do you mean, love? So I just go for peace. It's that feeling of just, it's not excitement. It's not passion. It's not anxiety. It's not neurotic. Does that make sense? Okay. So it goes through this whole thing. All these failings generated by fear, a soul sickness. Then fear, in turn, generates more character defects. Unreasonable fear that our instincts won't be satisfied. We eat, drink, and grab for more everything we need, fearing we shall never. These fears are the termites that ceaselessly. Both pride and fear. I mean, it's just like there's 9 times on one page. You get it? Get it. Fear, 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 fear. So now we're on to. So you do the fears list, whatever it is, okay? We put them on paper. It says, put them on paper. Even though we have no resentment in connection with them, we ask ourselves, why do I have them? So I take each one, snakes, why do I have them? Well, my first initial reaction is because they're icky, you know, or something like that. And my sponsor goes, okay, why else? And we have to do a little exploration. Why? Isn't it ultimately, I'm afraid they'll hurt me. I'm afraid it will hurt me. I'm afraid it will hurt. It will hurt me. Me, it will hurt. Me, it will hurt. It will hurt me. Me, it will, me. Get it? Me. So far, it's me. I don't care about this. I'm never afraid of the snake if it's going after you. So ultimately, they get down to this, wasn't it because self-reliance failed me? Ultimately, I'm afraid that I won't be able to take care of myself. Which I have good reason to believe, because that's exactly what's happening, is that I can't take care of myself. don't care for myself. I got a broken self-esteem. But I'm going to care for you. So if you could just come into my life, into my bed, into my world, into my everything, I'm going to care for you. And God damn it, you better care for me. And then we get this. I'm just disappointed. I'm really disappointed.
Oh, Jesus.
They're just disappointing. You know, after 16 relationships that are disappointing, I mean, mathematics will tell you, after two, you got a pattern going. Anyone that had more than two relationships? You got a pattern going. Might want to check that out. Okay. So self-reliance has failed me. Self-reliance, I'm just spitting right now and I wasn't even passionate. Sorry about that. Self-reliance was, I'm pulling the reamer here. All right. Self-reliance was good as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us once had great confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem. When it made us cocky, it was even worse. Perhaps we know a better way. A better way. We think so, because we're on a new basis. We're on a different basis. And I always ask myself when I start to freak out, just side note, everything in my life today, everything is a third step issue. An issue. Everything is a if I'm restless, irritable, and discontent, at this point, it's a third step issue. At this point in my sobriety, and I think early on in your sobriety, it's a third step issue. Because it's all about fear. If I'm restless, irritable, and discontent, it's about fear. If I'm anxious, it's about fear. If I can't sleep, if I'm afraid of this or afraid of that, it's fear. And I go, oh, aren't I on a new and different basis? Aren't I on a basis of trusting, relying upon God? Don't I trust my infinite God rather than my finite self? Didn't I do that third step thing? So it's like this rotation ball here. It's seventh step, I got self-centered fear. I do a fears list, step three, back to step seven, fears list, step three. I mean that, you know, and I get to peace like that. So I live on step three. I used to think I was living on step two. My first year, my sponsor says, we live on step two. For me at this point in my life, I live on step three. Because I'm not running the show. I mean, that's what it's talking about. Aren't you really afraid because you're running the show? And running the show is icky. It sucks because you fucking blow it all the time. I trust my infinite God. What does it mean? I better be acting like I trust my infinite God. It's not like if you're not acting like it, you're blowing it. It's just like if I'm not acting like it, I'm not in step three. No big deal. I can get back to it like that. Here's how I get back to it. Whatever you want, God. Here's also the shorter version. Fuck it. Fuck it. I can't do this. I can't fix this. So in August, right, I get diagnosed with breast cancer, which is just like, what? That's ridiculous. First of all, I don't get sick. Second of all, I've been trying to get off this fucking planet for like 40 years, right? Now, all of a sudden, it's like, well, we think you're going to die. And I'm like, what? And the first thing I have, I swear to God, I look up and I'm like, I was only kidding. I was kidding. You know what I mean? I was joking. And for the next few months, I, who have never acted like this before, actually started to fight for my life. Like I had heard all my sobriety, you need to act like your life is worth saving. You need to pretend like your life is worth saving. And holy mackerel, all of a sudden, my sponsor said, don't look now, but you're fighting for your life. Because I had this whole insurance thing that was just a nightmare and just a joke and just truly evil. I mean, if there's evil in the world, it's for sure in the insurance company. I'm not judging, I'm just saying. But anyway, and I said to her on the phone, because what they told me is, you're, they had been with me through the whole thing, right? The whole deal. Like I got insurance a year and a half before I even went to the doctor. And I wasn't even going to get insurance. But a few years back, I left my job and left California, went to take care of my mom and dad. And my mom has been on me like, you need to get health insurance. You really need to get health insurance. Now, just so you know, I wasn't working or anything. I just started to work because I was full-time getting my master's degree. And so I was in full-time school and I was doing an internship, which you don't get paid for any money. So I didn't have any money. I didn't have any insurance or any of that stuff. Bye, you guys. Have a good meeting. And give them hell. Tell them what's up. You guys will probably be the only two there, but anyway, have a good time. Fucking district. All right. So I say, where was I? Oh, thanks. God, those bastards. I know. I need to do a four-step. And I did. I did a four-step on it, but it was, you know, it's my expectation. That's where. So anyways, they say, so I got insurance and $250 a month. It took me like 8 months to even get to the doctor, right? So I get to the doctor finally and everything's going great, blah, blah, blah. And they call me back for another mammogram. And I'm like, okay. So I go back, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then they find this little thing, you know, and they're like, that needs to go. And I'm like, okay. Now, I'm a solution-oriented girl. I don't get really scared. I didn't feel a lot of fear at that moment. I didn't feel a lot of anger. All I felt was, okay, what's next? Let's go do it, right? Because I know I ain't dying. Like, I've been trying for years, and it just ain't going anywhere. So we do the surgery, and they apparently get all of it. And then they say, but you have to have this radiation. So I said, okay, yeah, sure, we'll get the radiation. And the insurance company says, no. Now, they've been with me over a year now. And that's a pre-existing condition. And I'm like, pre-existing to what? Well, it's a pre-existing condition. I said, you guys have been with me through this whole thing long before I even got the cancer. Yes, but you see, that's catastrophic. And you should have gotten catastrophic insurance. I'm like, well, what the fuck would I get catastrophic insurance for? I didn't know I had it. Well, that's the whole thing behind insurance, Samantha. You know, so I should have gotten catastrophic insurance at the very beginning, which covers chemotherapy and radiation, but I didn't. So what they kept saying to me was, your surgery benefits will cover a mastectomy. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't need a mastectomy. Well, but your insurance will cover a mastectomy. Yeah, but I don't need one. I need radiation. Well, your insurance. Okay. So then I said, well, a mastectomy is $250,000 and I need $20,000 worth of radiation. Your surgery benefits will cover a mastectomy. I said, so you'll pay for me to lose my body, but you won't pay for me to keep it. Well, I don't know about that, but I know that your surgery benefits cover that, right? And I'm like, don't you think that's evil? Don't you think it's a little evil? Well, I don't know, but your surgery benefits, you know, I mean, it's just like, whoa. So, of course, I hung up the phone, and I am going to show them. I'm going to fucking die. I'll show them. Like, they'll care. Like, cool, next, right? So that's it for me. I'm not doing it. Now, I don't know what I'm going to do. So all this trust shit went right out the window because I'm pissed now, right? And I don't know what I'm going to do or anything else. And so my oncologist calls me and he's like, so what do you decide? I'm like, I'm not going to get the radiation. He's like, well, you really need to get it. Yeah, but, you know, you guys said you got the whole tumor, right? So he's like, yeah. And I go, all right, because I went to law school, see, so I can be a little arguer. So I said to him, why don't you tell me why I need this? And the guy spent 45 minutes with me on the phone and told me why I need this. And I said, I can't afford it. And he said, how much can you afford? And I pulled some ridiculous number out of my hat, you know, like, well, I can pay you like $80 a month, but I can't start until January. And this was October. He's like, done. I'm like, fuck, are you kidding me? He's like, yep. So long story short, they helped me apply for state medical insurance. And I didn't think I qualified, but I did. And it, like, it all got taken care of like that, right? And I got the radiation, or as I like to call it, I'd go and get on the grill. I'd get on the grill every day, 5 days a week for 7 weeks. We got on the grill, man. And, you know, the whole point is this was a fear. And it was also this feeling of I'm not really relying and trusting upon God. Because this one's too big. Because I've heard your stories. But this isn't going to apply to me. And it just did. It's just one more thing. It's like, yep, you're no different. You're average. Average alcoholic. Yep, God did it again. Okay, next. So it says, perhaps there's a better way. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We're in the world to play the role he assigns. Now, here's a math problem, which always scares me, but it's a proportional problem. Just to the extent that we, two parts, that we do as we think he would have us do. Be careful, because our thinker's broken, so I get a second opinion, right, on everything. And part two, humbly rely on him. Just to the extent that I do as I think he would have me do, and humbly rely on him. Humbly meaning balance. I'm not the best. I'm not the worst. I don't deserve it. I don't deserve God's grace. You're missing the whole point. I hear all the time, well, I deserve a good relationship. I'm like, bitch, you deserve to be locked up for the rest of your life. We don't deserve it. I would miss the whole point of grace, which is an undeserved merit. I'm into mercy, not justice. I'm so grateful I get what I get and not what I deserve. I really have a hard time with that. You know, and I know there's a lot of people in here that as we get our lives together, it's like we deserve to be happy, joyous, and free. No, we don't deserve it. I don't deserve to be sober. I love it when people go, you know, I just buried my best friend like a year and a half ago, right? She had a whoops, man. She'd been sober for a while, got back on the oxycodone, slammed the oxycodone. I'm convinced that if she had done the cocaine with it, but she didn't get cocaine that night. She just did the oxycodone and boom, she's gone. So Kelly's gone, right? And people would be talking about, you know, I just don't know why I got it and she didn't. Like, she did get it. She got it for 5 years. We all get it. I haven't buried one person. I've met thousands and thousands of people in this program that have not stayed sober. I am one of them. That doesn't mean that I didn't take the first step in its entirety. I did the whole fucking deal in its entirety. Here's what I did. I stopped doing it. The only thing that separates us from the people that are loaded right now is that on some level I said thank you today instead of saying no thank you. It's very simple. Thank you. No thank you. My God is a very polite God. God doesn't shove this shit down your throats like we're doing. God's very polite. Because I really believe that my creator didn't want puppets, man. My creator wanted kids. And kids are fucking messy. You know what I'm saying? We're like in the high chair throwing oatmeal. I fucking hate this. I hate it. You know? And this is what God does. You know, when I have to, I'm throwing the oatmeal, he just, oh, that's enough for the oatmeal, right? Here, you can have crackers. You know what I mean? So it's like lots of times I lose. No, I give up the gift that I may have. I don't treat the relationship right, the relationship goes. I don't treat the garden appropriately, the garden dies. I don't have any more choice in drink today than I did 6,000 days ago. It's not about that. I've been restored to sanity, which doesn't mean I've been restored to be able to choose whether I want to drink or not, like the guys were saying. What it means is I have the choice to take care of the garden. The garden needs tending to. And that's what I do. It's like when Larry was talking about step three. Step three in turning my will and my life over to the care of the professional. You know, when I was 6 or 7 years sober, I wanted gardenias in my house. I had this obsession, one thought exclusive to all others, about gardenias, right? And so I went out and blew $120 on these gardenias. And I had a plan. The plan was I wanted them to grow right as you walked up my front way so that you could smell them all the way to the front door, right? Well, there's too much shade there, so they kept dying. And after blowing like $300 on gardenias, my husband at the time, he said, why don't we get a gardener? And I was like, why? I know what I'm doing. He's like, we're just going to get a gardener, man, just, you know, because this is getting expensive, Sam. You know what I mean? So the gardener comes over and he goes, where do you want the gardenias? And I said, I want them here. He goes, straight off the bat, they ain't going to grow there. And I go, why? And he explains to me, because they won't. There's not enough sun. And I hemmed and hawed, and he's like, look, why don't you just go to work and do what you do there and make the money to pay me, and I'll take care of the gardenias. I swear to God, 3 weeks later, those things are, I mean, you could smell them from the neighbor's yard. They were just busting, right? And that's the whole point, is I didn't turn my garden over to, I mean, I didn't give my garden to the gardener. I just put it in his care, and he kicked ass. And so that's kind of the same way that I'm going to try to do with my life on a moment-to-moment-to-moment-to-moment-to-moment basis. I don't take step three. I'm done with step three. It's a constant thing for me. And so step four is that physical manifestation that I trust. And that's what it says in the 12 and 12 at the very end of step four. It says, essentially, right, it will be our first tangible evidence of our complete willingness to move forward. So that's in step four. So really quick, so like any questions about step four? Do they have to have the mic if they ask a question? Okay. Heinrich. Okay, jawohl. The chosen race right here. All right. So step five, right? Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do? All right, so here's the deal. Let's just jump through it. We do the whole picking the sponsor, doing whatever you want to do. I don't care who you share it with. But we pocket our pride and we go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we've taken this step withholding nothing, we're delighted. Bullshit. So that's what I'll just jump in every time that something they say happened here and it didn't happen for me. I just go, bullshit, because that didn't happen for me. I didn't feel at perfect peace and ease. I didn't feel like I was walking hand in hand with the creator of the universe. I felt dirty. I felt dirty. But here's what I did feel. I felt like I was in this program. I was in it. And that I could say, I've done a fourth and a fifth. I could share on it. And it may not be this happy, joyous, and free kind of yippee. It was so great walking. It didn't feel like that to me. Because what was revealed to me was by far more than just these sort of general character defects, you know? The stuff that came out for me in my fourth step that really disturbed me wasn't how, and we're going to do sex inventory, but it wasn't how many people I'd slept with or what I'd stolen. It was stuff like this. It was the awareness that I terrified my parents and that there was a part of me that enjoyed it. You know? And it may not be that big of a deal for you. It's just for some reason that set so wrong with me because to me that was sociopathic. I mean, it was broken beyond like, you know, to just enjoy, that was enjoying hurting someone. It makes me nauseous right now. That's so weird. Sometimes I just get through this, no problem. I think what's coming up for me right now is that as I'm living with my mom and dad right now and taking care of my mom and dad, I hated my mom. Like, I mean, hated her. I would obsess about dropping acid in her coffee and just watching her flip out. You know what I mean? And I talked to other 12-year-old girls about this, and they're like, what? And they didn't obsess about that, so I don't know. I feel like pouring this over my head right now. But anyway, we really, I mean, I just like I said, she was top on my resentment list. And I'm adopted, so I had this whole hate for my biological mom, like, that, you know, that bitch, and what's she thinking, and how dare she throw me away, and blah, 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 all this shit, right? I come to AA and found thousands of people who feel exactly the same way, and they weren't adopted. Or at least, they were told they weren't. But anyway. Check out the milkman, you might look like him. But anyway, the life that I'm living now, the old wounds get triggered every now and then. And I think about that stuff. Now, my mom and dad are like 25 years in Families Anonymous, which is like Al-Anon, only more hardcore. And they were a huge part of me getting sober, which I'll talk about tomorrow maybe. But anyways, they're black belts in Al-Anon. You know what I mean? It's like I'd come to the front door to get a shower or something to eat, and my dad would walk to the front door in his bathrobe, you know, and he'd hold out this empty urine sample cup. And I'd just, like, shake my head, walk away. And he'd go, get off my property. Get the hell out of here. And I know that he would get back into bed, and he'd hold my mom, and they'd weep. But they had learned in their program that they had to give their child the dignity to live and the dignity to die. And that they couldn't cure it, and they couldn't control it, and they didn't cause it. You know, and that their primary purpose was to secure their own oxygen mask before helping someone with theirs, is that they had to maintain their sanctuary and they couldn't have some drug addict thief coming back in and rocking their world. It didn't do anyone any good because they'd forget about the rest of the world and they'd be focused on Samantha and everybody else in their life suffered. So anyway, let's just go back for a second to the sex inventory. How interesting that I skipped over that. God came through again. Don't forget the sex inventory. Oh, shut up. Let's go back. Now about sex, right? Page 69. Page 68, 69. Now about sex. Most of us need an overhauling there. But so we did the fears list, and we do the fear prayer. And the fear prayer is really simple, right? And I say it. I ask God to remove my fear. God, remove my fear and direct my attention to what you would have me be. At once I commence, I begin to outgrow fear. That's it as far as that four-step inventory and fears list go. Now we complete the four-step with the sex inventory. So we try to be sensible. We do it pretty simple. This one I don't do horizontally. I do it pretty quickly. And how do we do it? I start off with a list. Because the list is, whom did I hurt? And I do the list, right? As best as I can remember. And the thing that you probably don't get confused on, but lots of people I've worked have gotten confused on, the whom did I hurt, it's rarely people I slept with or had sex with. I mean, sometimes, yeah. But the more uncomfortable ones were like somebody's wife or their kids. I put them on the sex inventory because those were the people that I stole time from. Those were the people that I unjustifiably aroused jealousy, suspicion, and bitterness. Does that make sense? I remember a girl saying, you know, well, I was having an affair, a long-term affair with this married man. And I said, well, does he need to go on the inventory list? And she said, I never hurt him. He was fine with it, everything else. And I said, well, then we need to go ahead and put his wife. Why? She never knew. She never knew. To this day, she has no idea. I said, do you mean to tell me that in 8 years, she never wondered where he was? Never? You don't think in 8 years, perhaps, she was a little nervous? You don't think in 8 years she said one of these, are you having an affair? And he'd say, you're crazy. And now she thinks she's crazy. Because she's feeling something's going on. Ever been there before? Ever been on the other side of it? You're fucking crazy. And inside you're just like, oh shit. I better not meet him tonight, you know. Anyway, so whom did I hurt? That's the list. And then I go through sort of a checklist kind of thing. Then I go through, because it starts off with, we reviewed our own conduct over the years past. And it starts with, where have I been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? And the second question is, whom did I hurt? And I just start off my inventory with the second question. That's about as much as I change it around. If that's offensive to you, I don't fucking care. Write about it. So anyway, whom did I hurt? And then, you know, Joe, Charlie, Paul, whatever, so-and-so, Susie, whatever, and their kids. And I say, where was I selfish? Pretty easy. Where was I selfish? I wasn't thinking about them. Doesn't have to be a lot more than that. Where was I dishonest? Okay? And this is where I will put I was dishonest to myself. I don't put myself on my four-step inventory. I don't. Lots of people do. What I found was is that I covered why I resented myself in the fourth column. So it just started to get repetitious. I would put myself on the resentment list, and then I'd do the columns on who, you know. But essentially, I resent myself because I'm selfish, self-centered, self-seeking, and afraid. So I took care of all that in the fourth column. Does that make sense? I just was taught you don't put yourself on the fourth column, but on the fourth step. But you do put yourself on your eight-step amends list. So however you want to do that, that's fine by me, just how I do it. Did I arouse jealousy? Did I unjustifiably, like there's a justified time to arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness. I don't get that one, Bill, but anyways. Did I unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Yes. How? Go ahead and write about it. Where was I at fault? Interestingly enough, this is the only part of the fourth step that you actually say, you know, what should you have done instead? Notice in the fourth step inventory, you put where you are at fault, but it never asks you to say, what should you have done instead? Interesting. Maybe they left it out. Maybe they forgot. I don't know. But they sure as hell didn't miss it in the sex inventory. And so the sex inventory, what should I have done instead? It could be as simple as I shouldn't have fucked him. Next. So, and now I'm going to give this other disclaimer. When we get down to this stuff, in this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We ask God to mold our ideals and help us to live up with them. I just did this workshop in Australia like a month ago. And this one guy in the back, we did a bunch of question and answers, and he said, whose value is it to not sleep with a married man? And I said, good point. It's none of my business. It really isn't. I mean, with every woman that I work with, I go, I hope that you'll go back to school, and I hope that you'll take a women's studies course so that you can realize why it is that you're so fucked up, essentially. You know, and I don't know how it is for men. But I know that for America, the historical stuff is, I need to learn where I got these values. And I got these values, be it good or bad, I'm not saying, but I got these values from a religion. that our country was founded on. And our country was founded on a puritanical Judeo-Christian form of a philosophy, an ideology. I was raised with the philosophy that Eve ate the apple and we're all fucked because of it. Okay? Now, we can get into the New Testament all you want, where it's forgiveness and forgiveness and forgiveness, but that shit carries with you if you're a woman. It's like, it's in my DNA. You blew it, whore. Poor Adam. You worked him with your tits and everything, and you're like, hey, bro, let's go to the other side of the garden. And he's like, no, we really shouldn't. Come on, come on, come on, you know, and he's just like, fuck, yeah, let's go. Right? And then she's talking to the snake. She's like, yeah, it looks sweet. And he's like, yeah, it's sweet. You know. And then you're like, Adam, come on, Adam. Come on, Adam. Now, that's just my own interpretation. I don't know. I don't know if it happened like that. But that's the, you know, that's the myth or whatever it is that I grew up with. And that is a hard one to break 2,000 years later. And I'm telling you that because I deal with women every single day that no matter how they behave, they feel like whores. And I'm not saying we don't do a fine job just doing all that we can to just make sure that that shit's validated by what we wear and how we talk and how we need you guys and work you guys, you know. I'm not proud of it, and I'm not saying it's an excuse. I'm just saying that's some historical shit that's hard to break. And don't misunderstand me for a second. To be a man in this culture is a motherfucker too, because I don't like the way that the men have been raised to be told you can't cry, you can't touch, you can't feel, you can't talk. Nothing has done more damage to the intimacy, to the connection that we need as human beings, than the shame of you guys talking to me. It breaks my heart. It breaks my heart. Because I see little boys, men, that struggle to be good men. And for me, a good man is not a man who does good. A good man is a man who struggles to do good. A good man is the man that struggles between his dark, just the shadow. You know, I shouldn't fuck her. I shouldn't fuck her. God, she's new. I shouldn't do it. I shouldn't do it. God, I want to do it. God, I want to do it. That's a good man to me. That's a good man. You know, I don't. And where you want to take it, that's up to you. But I'm just saying, you know, that struggle's tough. You know? So. And like I say, you know, we say in my home group, when you're having sex with a newcomer, how do you like fucking your retarded sister? How was that for you? How was it for her getting her back into the wheelchair? How was that? It says pretty clearly, right, on 43 in step 4, by discovering what our emotional deformities are. I'm having sex with an emotionally deformed person. Proud of it. Nice to meet you. All right. So in this way, we tried to shape a sane and ideal future sex life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? Then I asked God. There's prayers in this book all over the place, right? Here's the sex prayer. God, mold my ideal and help me to live up to it. Whatever your ideal is, it's yours. I teach a class, and I got to wrap this up, but I teach a class when I'm not taking care of my parents. I teach a class at Santa Barbara Community College called Law and Ethics. I know the two don't sound like they can go together, but I teach in the psychology department, and I essentially teach wannabe therapists what the law is about being an ethical therapist and what the ethics are. And they're a huge difference, right? The law is the law. The law is pretty simple. We can look it up in the book. The ethics, that gets a little dicey, because ethics are based on morals, and morals are based on what the social norm is, but it still doesn't address what your ideal is. If my ideal is that monogamy is the best, all I ask my students to do is tell me why. Why? Well, you know, because that's what's good. No. For the entire semester, you can't use the word good or bad or right or wrong in my class. Get out a thesaurus if you need to, but find me a different way. Don't tell me that child molestation is bad. Tell me why. You know, well, it causes the child to suffer. Well, you know, in the East, it's just suffering. What's the big fucking deal? So what? It's just suffering. And I'm not saying it's okay. What I'm saying is this should get you emotionally charged. Why is it that it's bad to do that? And ultimately, it always comes down to some spiritual answer. In some way, it comes down to a harm done. And the big book and the 12 and 12 talk about what harm we're talking about. And for me, I say it like this, because there's some actions that I take that help me evolve spiritually. And there's some actions I take that don't. They don't even necessarily help me devolve. What they do is they create a distraction from evolving spiritually, which is essentially what I think drugs and alcohol do. It's just a fucking distraction from truth, which is your divine, which is the scariest thing I tell people, which I think is the biggest reason people get loaded, is because they can't step up and own the fact that being a recovered and sober human being comes with huge, huge responsibility. Being divine is huge. And here's what being divine is for me. Being Sammy. Being Samantha. And whatever that means. Messy, profane, scared, flinging snot from wall to wall, kind, happy, joyous, whatever. All sides of me. And it can be messy sometimes. But that's my job. My job is to be Samantha. And it's not as easy as we make it sound, no? It's not that easy to be you. My God, you spend the first 5 years in sobriety going, what the fuck is that? No idea. My sponsor just gave me a rock, like 70 days sober. She's like, and just said, just bloom. Just bloom. She's like, I don't even know where to go with you. Just bloom. So anyways, that's the sex inventory. Through the fifth step is, again, the fifth step for me is just, it's just another level of humility. We find that it's just not enough humility to do it between you and God. That's what they found. So they say the first 100 men and women, they're not telling you what to do. They're just telling you what they did. You don't have to do it. They don't care. We don't care. I mean, we care, but we don't care. I can't care too much. If I care too much, I lose my effectiveness. To a certain extent, I have to be objective, right? We'll get into the 12 step a lot today, and we'll talk about the fact that, you know, I do not sponsor you to get you sober. Doesn't matter. And as much as we want to say, keep coming back and don't leave before the miracle, that's not what our book says to the doubter. If you're not sure you're an alcoholic, there's clear-cut directions in here for you. It says to the doubter, perhaps we say, perhaps you're not an alcoholic after all. Perhaps you should try some controlled drinking. Bearing in mind, meanwhile, what we've told you about alcoholism. In the big book in chapter 3, it says, we don't like to pronounce anyone an alcoholic, but you can quickly diagnose yourself. Step over to the nearest bar room. Try to have just one. Try to have one and stop. Try it. Try it more than once. As much as I love, don't leave before the miracle and keep coming back. That's really not part of our program. Our program says there's only one fucking thing that's going to convince you you're an alcoholic. Alcohol. You have to drink it. You don't really think that people say, you know, you're an alcoholic. You know, you keep drinking like that, you're going to die. You know what my response would be? When? Because this is bullshit. There's only one thing that's going to convince you you're a drug addict. Drugs. You have to do them. That's why we bury a lot of people. I don't like it, but, frothy emotional appeal isn't going to work with the newcomer, man. The message has got to have depth and weight. It says go drink. And people come up to me after the meeting, that's not really the best message to tell the newcomer. You know, you're going to scare the newcomer off. And Big Al, man, used to tell me, hey, baby, don't worry about it. If you scare them out of the room, alcohol will scare them back in. If they live. So I need to be careful with that stuff. But I'll tell you, I'm just going to deliver the meal the way it's served. You can't have it baked on the side. You know what I mean? With the sauce on the side. And can I have it? No. We serve it the same way in Iceland that you serve it in Phoenix and Santa Barbara and Atlanta and Texas. It's the same fucking meal. And we're going to serve it the same way anywhere you go. Because that's our job. Right? Questions? Guys? Okay, thanks.